Now it's my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. Her name is Kat, and she's from Fresyes. Please give Kat a warm welcome.
So I'm Kat. I'm an alcoholic. I'm really happy to be here. I'm really honored to come be with you guys tonight. Bill asked me to speak. I don't see him. Dirty rat. Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry. Must be nice. He asked me to speak, so he did this to you. So we did roll down here from Fresno. We had some food and then came on over. My sobriety date is February 9th of 2007. By the grace of God, I am an F up. Trust me. I don't do this perfectly. The good thing about God's grace is that it works even if I don't. Right? In spite of me. I don't even have to be with it. I'm not really, you know, it'll work regardless. And I want to say, I know no one identified as a newcomer, but you don't need to be a newcomer to be suffering from alcoholism, I want you to know. I've sat in rooms with time under my belt, suffering from pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. I don't need alcohol to destroy myself. I don't need alcohol to place myself beyond human aid. So if you are in this room and you're suffering, I want you to know that I'm glad you're here. I hope that something I say tonight makes you want something that I have, makes you want something that Alcoholics Anonymous has. And if you are new and if you're an alcoholic, and I hope that alcohol is done with you. And if you don't know if you're an alcoholic, get with someone that does. Get with someone that does. Alcohol had to be done with me. Alcohol was driving. I was not in control. I prayed many times, you know, like, let it be done with me. And I've asked for things to be done with me at different times in my sobriety too, because like I said, it's not just alcohol that I suffer from. I have a hard problem. I have a hard time living as well. So, you know, Bill asked me to talk about spiritual experiences. He asked me to talk about unity, and he asked me to talk about service. So I'm going to try my best to let you know that I earned my seat here, that I'm a real alcoholic, like the book says. And my qualifiers is that I'm the kind of drinker where if I know I'm going to drink later, I'm already ready. I'm like, what? Okay, cool, work, whatever, I can get through it. I can get through anything as long as I know that I'm going to get what I want later that night. I'll start feeling the ease and comfort that comes from taking a drink before I even get there. I've got that priming effect already because I know I'm going to get what I want. So, yeah, no big deal. You know, and when I get that drink, I have that one drink, and a frenzy goes off inside of me, and I have to have another. I have to have another. That is specific to alcoholics. If you drink that way, you might be alcoholic. You know, and there's another thing that happens when I take a drink. I need three immediately, first of all. I need to get there quick. I needed to get there, like, back there. You know, so I have three immediately, and then I carry the drink around because I want to look appropriate. Like, I want to look... Really? They all know my story. They could probably come up here and tell my story for me. So don't mind the inappropriate laughter. But, like, I need to get there. If you're an alcoholic like me, I needed to get there. You know, I'm holding on. I need to get there immediately. So I drink those three drinks, and I'm always one drink away from feeling okay. You know, I suffer from, like, alcohol neglect or, you know, like, I need to always have it, you know. And I'm always thinking the next one, the next one, the next one. And then I'm in a blackout. I'm a blackout drinker. I wake up from blackouts in lineups. You know, like, I remember. True story. And if it wasn't for my older brother who taught me how to do drink, drug, everything. If it wasn't for my older brother, I don't know. But he, you know, I woke up in a blackout. I was 16 years old. I was in Hanford. I was on the overpass over 198 on 12th Avenue, and we got stopped. And the grace of God was there. The grace of God was there because my brother, who was a hustler, already knew what to say. Oh, this is my sister. I'm going to get her home. I'll get her home. We're going to walk. Everyone else went to jail that night except for me and my brother. You know, and it didn't occur to me that I was 16 years old in a blackout. It didn't occur to me that people didn't have blackouts because I started having blackouts immediately. Because I need to get there. That's how I drink. I took my first drink when I was 14, and I already, from the very first drink, I had consequences for my drinking. I did shit that I didn't want to do. You know, I did stuff that I didn't want to do, you know, because I need what I need. And sorry about the profanity. It's really hard. But, you know, like that's who I am. I needed comfort. I needed a sense of ease and comfort before I even found alcohol. Okay. So fast forward. I'm 27 years old. I'm drinking, you know, like when I, let me skip. So in that age, you know, where I can't buy alcohol for myself, I would get my mom to buy alcohol for me because she owed me. She owed me because she didn't protect me, because she, you know, I had all these terrible things happen to me when I was a kid, so she owed me. So I would go, and that would be the only way I would see her. Go, well, you can see me now, buy me alcohol, you know. And I remember one time, like, walking out, like, getting what I wanted, walking out and shattering the fifth and being like, well, we have to go buy and get more. We have to go get more. Because I have to drink, you know, and so that's who I was as a daughter. That's what I did to my family. And, you know, as a daughter, I expected my mom to participate in my alcoholism, to fund my alcoholism. I expected her and not say a thing. Don't you dare say a thing to me while I'm drinking. You know, I asked her to stand by and watch as I killed myself and participate by buying me the alcohol. That's the kind of daughter that I am. Watch me die. Watch me kill myself slowly and participate in the weapon that kills me, you know. And I didn't even see that. I had no idea that I was doing that to her. But I had that thing, you know, I had that thing over her head that I could use. And I used it. You know, I had no idea that that's who I was as a daughter until I had some time under my belt, sober, some time under my belt, honest, some time under my belt with, you know, being able to tell the truth about myself, not being in denial or ashamed of my story, where I've been, what I've done. You know, I lived so many years ashamed of who I was, where I'd been, what I'd done, the things that had happened, the things I let happen. You know, I'm the oldest daughter of 11 kids. You know, there's a lot of kids before me. You know, and there's a lot of prison in my story. My dad go to prison, come out, get my mom pregnant, violate, go back to prison. So everyone's spaced out by depending on, you know, what his violations are. Second offense, did he use the kid's car? Did they send him to a treatment center? You know, like all my brothers and sisters are spaced out that way, you know? And it's crazy, you know? So here I am protecting. And when I found alcohol, protecting my family became a little inconvenient. You know, I couldn't care about them. They were inconvenient. They got in the way of my drinking. I didn't want to be responsible. I didn't want to think about them. I didn't want to think that maybe I should be who's home with them. Were they unprotected like I was unprotected? You know, I don't want to think about that. That's inconvenient. It got in the way of my drinking. It ruined my buzz. Forget all that. So what's the most obvious thing? I left. I left them and pretend like they didn't exist. And that, you know, like I needed something else to be ashamed of. Like I needed something else to beat myself up with, you know. So, you know, 20, 21, 22, 23, you know, going out, I don't know how to do anything without drinking. I don't know how to celebrate. I don't know how to be sad. I don't know how to be around other human beings. I don't really feel very human myself, you know, and I'm just doing this thing, you know, and somehow, some way, I get a job, you know, I get another job. I'm able to remain employed somehow. You know, I'm just able to keep it together enough to like fake a decent life, fake being a human being, you know, and things started to happen. I started to like injure myself. So I've rug burned from here to here because I'm just like face planning all the time because I'm in a blackout all the time. I'm busting my face open. I'm starting not to be able to hide it. I'm 27 years old and I'm starting not to be able to hide my alcoholism. Not to mention, can I not open my mail? Can I not answer my phone? Can I not let you inside my house? If you were to look inside my house, you would know something is up. Because on the outside, I can present. I'll present. But on the inside of my house, you'd be like, what is that smell? What's going on in here? Like, I smell something's wrong, you know? If you were to look at my bank account, if you were to look at the flashing messages or my inability to answer the door, because they're coming, they're going to find out. I don't know who they are, but they're going to find out. I was always afraid. I was really, really afraid. And you guys own me. People owned me. I really, really, really wanted to feel how you guys looked, how people looked. I wanted that life. Whatever it was, I didn't know what I wanted, but I didn't want what I had, that's for sure. You know, I didn't know. You know, I didn't know how to do this human being thing. So I'm 27 years old, and now it's my alcoholism has progressed, and I am drinking less and blacking out sooner. You know, and I can't figure out what's going on. You know, I'm hurting myself. People are praying over me. People are calling me possessed. When I'm awake, so you identify then, okay? He identifies. No, I'm serious. People are praying over me because when I am awake, I am so hostile. I am so angry. I mean, I am like in a rage because I hate myself. I don't know if you guys have ever felt that way, but I hated myself so much. I had to go away. I had to go away from that. And I just remember being awake and then people, I don't even understand how people were around me. So seeing things like that are happening, and I started waking up in the morning and getting ready for my little business job. I work for Kings County Clerk Recorder's office, and so, you know, in this office with all, you know, doing these grown-up things. And like, I am waking up, getting ready, putting on my, like, office clothes, and then waking up, like, passing out. Waking up in a pool of my own vomit. Like, well, that's not normal. And I knew people died that way. I knew people died that way. But it had to happen a few times. It wasn't like one time, oh, I better just stop drinking. I was always under, and the book talks about this. I was always under the impression that if I had some time without alcohol, that would qualify me to drink as a normal person. I was always under the impression that if I understood why my terrible childhood happened the way that it did, that I would somehow not need to drink the way I drink. If I could just rectify the stuff from the past, I would not have to drink the way I drank. I didn't realize that I wasn't in control of the way I drank. I'm an alcoholic because I have a different reaction. People who are not alcoholic have had the childhood and had the stuff happen to me that I have, and they don't drink over it. It's crazy. They don't drink over it. My reaction is I need to drink. I need comfort. I am a comfort junkie. I can't do discomfort. And actually, I don't really care for anyone else's discomfort either. You know, like, it's also inconvenient. You know, I don't want to care. I don't want to get attached. You know, like, I don't want to form bonds, or then you might have need something from me and then I'm going to have to show up. So, you know, like, I didn't know what to do. You know, if any of that sounds familiar to you, I don't know what to do. I don't come from let's get recovery. I come from let's see how far we can go before we get caught. I come from don't talk about it. Don't talk about it. You don't say things outside of this family. That's where I come from. We don't acknowledge that stuff. And I sat on my friend's couch and she's like, I'm going to go to the ANA. And I'm like, let's do that. That sounds good. For the very first time in my life, I was open to not drinking, you know, open to doing something, you know, and I had a feeling that there was this God thing in AA, and that was a real turnoff for me. I did not like God. I felt like God's blind spot. I felt like God wasn't there for me, you know, so, but whatever, I still went anyways, and I went to a meeting in Hanford. I went to my first meetings in Hanford. I did a lot of drinking in this town, actually, too. Bogart and Lulu's, anyone? I'm 38, so, like, around that era. And then the hot dogs, and then the dancing, so it was not good. It wasn't good. I'm trying to remain in a flow, but it's hard. So I'm 27 years old. I go to this meeting, and it's uncomfortable because everyone is happy and people are talking about real stuff and they're unafraid to tell the real stuff about themselves. And I was like, what is this? This is crazy. Like, the level of honesty and the level of vulnerability that these people were talking at was like mind-blowing. It was totally uncomfortable. I was the one with the CNN banner across my head that said, you know, just POS, you know, like, had everywhere I've been and what I've done. I was absolutely sure that you guys thought about me the way I thought about me. I was absolutely sure that I didn't deserve to be here. In a room full of people who had burned their life to the ground, I was the one that I didn't belong. You know, like, me. You know, like I'm not powerful. Like, I'm not special. Like, my story's that special. But, I mean, it's my story. You know, I've been polishing it for years. You know? So, in my head, it was that big of a deal. And so these people were talking about real stuff. And they were saying it, and they weren't afraid. And that was what originally, I was like, what in the world? And I'm not saying I jumped on the board immediately, but I'm a follower and I'm a people pleaser. So, like, they were like, get a sponsor, work the steps. And I'm like, oh God, okay. So I got myself a sponsor, and like, I needed a woman that's been some places. Okay. So I like was looking around, looking at the women, and I'm like, oh no, not her. And then my sponsor came in, and she just had this little, she was probably about like in her late 60s, maybe early 70s. And she had a tiny little skirt on. It was like that big, and just like a tiny little tube top, and like just barely covered. And I was like, her, she's going to hear my fifth step, that woman, because I needed someone that had been somewhere. Okay. You know, like, I judged myself harshly. I needed someone, I mean, you know, so I worked the steps, you know, and, I want to talk about some of the spiritual experiences. So I worked the steps in with that sponsor. I could not work those set of steps today because I did a shoddy job. I was ungrateful. I was entitled. Same thing. I did a shoddy job, and those steps worked in spite of me. Those steps changed my life and worked in spite of me. And I stayed. I stayed because of it. That was 11 years ago, you know. I want to talk to you about some spiritual experiences. One of the biggest ones for me was I was not sold on the God thing. I had a lot of issues with the God thing. And it took like 5 years. Honestly, it took 5 years for me to get to a place where I was like, all right, I surrender, you know. But I had an issue because I judged myself very harshly. You know, I hadn't forgiven myself for where I'd been and what I'd done and what I had let happen. So why in the world would something like God, pure white woolen robe, beautiful locks, you know, like, why would he forgive me? I can't forgive me. And that was my problem. If God could forgive me, I can't forgive me. I can't forgive me for what I've done, where I've been, and what has happened. I can't forgive me. I can't be in acceptance of my story. I'm still living back there. I'm still living back in my story, trying to rearrange it, trying to make it sound good. You know, I'm living there. I'm never here because I'm living back there, you know. And in that fifth year, I was able to understand that I needed to be here. And, you know, and I have some time under my belt with that same story, helping other women survive this with that story that I thought was useless, that I thought I would save inside of me for the rest of my life. I was perfectly fine with keeping all that stuff inside because why, what use was it? All it caused was pain. You know, I share that story today. I'm unafraid to share it. And it's helped people. It's helped, you know, some woman came before me. This is not new to me. I did not create this. Some woman came before me who had the nerve to tell the truth, who provoked me to tell the truth. And I tell the truth so that you guys can tell the truth, so you can be unafraid to tell the truth about where you've been and what you've done and what you've let happen. And that's just how it works. That's not original to me. I just fell in line. You know, I fell in line to the people who came before me, the people who opened the doors before me, the people who came years and years and years and years before me so that I could get this. I'm getting off on a tangent. We'll get into that with service. Okay. But I want to talk about the spiritual experience. So I was working at a hospital, CRMC in Fresno, and this inmate had come in. And he, you know, I went in, checked on him, and they had induced coma. And he, you know, like my, you know, the person before me was like, oh, hey, you know, here you go. Here's this info and stuff. And, okay, by the way, they're going to go ahead and let him know he's paralyzed from the legs down. Bye. I was like, what? So I opened up his, you know, chart, and I look and I see that he's 2 months younger than me. Like, we're the same age. And, instead of being like, you know, he's a criminal or whatever the situation is, whatever the reason why he's in prison, landed in prison, the next thing I know, I'm up at that guy's bed and I'm praying for him. Because for the very first time, I'm thinking to myself, how would I feel to wake up and know that I'm paralyzed from the waist down? How would I want to be treated? What do I need? And I prayed for him. You know, and all my spiritual experiences have come after the fact. Like, I'm not like, I'm going to have a spiritual experience right now. Like, it always happens in hindsight. It really does. I can't force myself. I would be much, much more spiritual if I did. But, like, I can't force myself, you know. So I come to, like, you know, and I'm praying for this guy, you know. And that's not, you know, like, I have issues with men. Surprise. You know, I have issues with men. And, you know, I'm praying for this guy because, honestly, I didn't want him to be alone. And why he's there is none of my business. And guess what? I've been places. I've done some shit. You know, who am I to judge? Who am I? You know, the thing about it is that I got to be there. No, I wasn't, like, holding his hand or anything, but I'm like, he wasn't alone. I didn't know I was going to do that day. I had no idea where I was going to work that day. And that's where I ended. And that is God. That is not me. That is God that cracks my heart open and allows me to live this way. That's not of me. I'm a selfish jerk. I am. You know, like, it's inconvenient. Feelings and stuff are inconvenient. And that's one of the things that happened. Another thing that happened is, you know, I had come to this program thinking that my mom was the reason that, you know, my life was crappy. You know, my mom, she didn't do this, she didn't do this. And then about 6 years ago, I was diagnosed with children. And terminal, acute. I got to see what it was like to be a mom. It is hard. It's terrifying. It's equal parts terror, equal parts excitement, but mostly terrifying. It is hard to be a mother, let alone a mother to this alcoholic. Demanding, never got enough attention. Yeah, I told you guys I had 10 brothers and sisters. There was never enough. I suffer from not enough anyways. Nothing is enough for me. You know, I saw how hard it was to raise children, and I understood. I had compassion for my mom. My mom is very lucky. You know, it wasn't until I got sober that she told me about when the drug dealers would come over to collect their debt from my dad. You know, he got to go away to prison. My mom was home, you know, when they came over saying, "Where's Rick? Where's my money? He rolled blah, blah, blah." You know, like, we had to deal with that. She had to tuck us away. She had to stand out there with a bat. I didn't know that. Had no idea that that was going on. I had no idea what she was doing because I only have my perception. I only have my story and the story that I generated about who she was. I had no idea who she really was. And, you know, I started having compassion for my mom. I started thinking differently about her. And a lot of my spiritual experiences have come when I'm quiet, which is not very often. But, like, because my brain is going. I don't know about any of you guys, but my brain is, like, 90 miles an hour, especially in newly in sobriety. It's always, always going, thinking, what's the next thing? And I just, okay, go to this, do this. I just exhaust myself all day. So what would happen, especially when I got kids, is that right when I would wake up in the morning, I'd hear God tell me something. And I'd be like, what was that? I would hear this voice inside my head. You know, my thoughts are going this way, and there's this one thought that goes this way, and I'm like, what? I should make amends? What? Pray for them? What? Who is that? And these things that I was never, never, never down to do started popping into my head, and I'm like, okay, well, I'll just try that. And I would try it, and guess what? I would mend a relationship. Guess what? I would stop hating myself. I would act right. I would start being a part of. I would say yes to things. You know, these my train of thought, that one thought. And so I got used to listening to that one thought, the one thought that goes against everything that I normally think. And my life starts to change. You know, I had this one time in particular where I was dreaming. And I had this dream where my mom's in the kitchen and she was cooking, which was suspect to begin with. So I was like, are you cooking? This is weird. What's going on? And she's like doing something with some batter in my dream. This is a dream. And my mom's like, you know, even God can't change the past. And I was like, oh my God, she's right. And then that was like the end of the dream. But like, sometimes I'm so in my head that sometimes God has to come to me like that, because I'm always go, 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 go. And I realized that I got to let that stuff go. You know, my mom got really sick in my fifth year of sobriety when when I had, you know, I had my standout or my shootout with God, and, you know, God won. That was when my mom got really sick, and I had those 10 brothers and sisters, and my mom, she went to the hospital, and she had everything failure. So, like, renal, respiratory, all the failures. And I wasn't done punishing her yet. And they're, you know, the person's like, the chaplain's like, well, or the doctor was like, your mom's very sick. Have everyone come now. And I had, you know, I was right up against, like, getting custody of my brothers and sisters because they were, some of them were minors still. And then I was right up against, like, letting my mom go, you know, like letting her leave this world and also forgiving her, allowing my mom to be human. And she's tough, so she survived. And our relationship changed, you know. I didn't come to AA for any of that. I didn't come to AA to get a different relationship with my mom. It just happened. I didn't come here to forgive her. It didn't happen. It just happened. You know, I have found that I have to let people off the hook. I really do. I have a really high expectation of myself, and it transmits to all of you too. Like, I have to let it go. And I'm learning to do that. I'm not perfect at any of that, but I'm learning to do that, you know. And I really appreciate this, that what the book talks about it. And if you guys haven't checked it out, please check it out. Spiritual Experience in the Back. It's, you know, like, I always thought it's the white light, it's about purity, and it's about, you know, all this wonderful good things, and I never thought I was worth any of that. You know, but what the book talks about, a spiritual experience is a change in behavior. That's all it is. It's just a change in the behavior. It's that stream of thoughts and you doing what that one little opposite thought says. It's you, instead of picking up, not picking up and going to a meeting, calling your sponsor, doing everything that feels like it, you're body wants to go against it. When you do it, that's a spiritual experience. And when you do it again and again and again and again, your life will change. You know, the book talks about that. You know, you have a disease that only a spiritual experience will conquer. I'm sorry. If you are an alcoholic, a spiritual experience. And if you don't know if you're an alcoholic, like I said, work with a sponsor. Look at page 21. I'm going to share a couple things from that page. Seldom mildly intoxicated. Always more or less insanely drunk. That's exactly me. When I heard that for the very first time, my cheeks got red and I was like, oh my God, that's exactly me. I felt like I had been outed. Because that's exactly how I drink. I am always insane when I drink. I can never get enough when I drink, and I like it that way. I want to be gone. You know, I think I'm in control of it. I think I'm doing that, and I'm not. I will drink. I am an alcoholic. I will drink. It's not if and when. It's not if, it's when. It's when I drink. I kind of want to talk a little bit about unity. You know, I don't do this alone. You know, I can't say anything else other than that. I cannot do this by myself. I needed those stories of those women so that I could be brave enough to say the truth about myself. And I'll tell you the first story that I heard that made me tell the truth about myself. I was in a meeting off of Winery in Ashland in Fresno. And I was going to this women's meeting because I wanted to look good. And I wanted to, like, go to the women's meetings. And I wasn't into it, you know. I don't really like women, you know. They're my competition. And, you know, like, I'm sure they're better than me, and, you know, they haven't been where I've been. So I'm at this woman's meeting, and this woman, she said, I lost my dignity. And I was like, embarrassing. Like, I would never say that about myself. I'm thinking this. I'm not saying it out loud. I'm thinking it like, that's embarrassing. I would never say that about myself. And I'm having this gigantic reaction. The people around me are like, yeah. They're like, you know, the AA nod. And I was like, what the heck's going on? Like, these people are, them too? And then I was like, oh my God, me too. Weak. I don't like to feel weak. I don't like to feel vulnerable. Ugh, no. I hate it. And so when she revealed herself that way, I was like, oh my God. And so then I immediately went to another meeting and shared it so I can get all the credit. And I did. And then I started like really listening and being like, oh my God, me too, me too, me too, me too, me too. And then I wasn't so special after all. You know, I started like, oh, me too. And I'll never forget that. She was brave enough to do that. And that's why I do it too. That's why I do it too. Because somewhere out there, someone might have my story. Male, female, I don't know. Someone might have my story. Someone might need to hear me be able to say it so that they can say it too. That's what I was taught. I cannot do this by myself. My alcoholism wants me to be isolated. It likes me there. It'll settle for it. It wants me drunk, but it'll settle for me in a position like it by myself, you know, where I start to think, you know, and then I relapse and I hate myself, and then I get really thirsty, and then I do some bad behavior, right? Because I'm good at that. I text, I call, spend all my money, go eat a chocolate cake, do what I do, and then I hate myself, and then I have to drink. I have to drink because I hate myself and I don't have anything between me and the hate. God's gone. You know, I need to feel better immediately. I know it works. And I drink because that's what I do. You know, I'm very unimaginative. I drink. We were talking about unity on the way over here, and Emily and Carrie are my sponsees. We do this together, and we're doing the first tradition right now, and we're talking about unity. And you know, Emily talks about being the gazelle on the outside of the pack, you know, and getting picked off. And that's exactly what happens. And I've seen it. And I've sat in rooms, the AA rooms, not as long as some of you guys have, and I've watched people go away. I have, this is not my cell phone, but pretend like it is. I have phone numbers and names of people who are no longer alive because they went back out. Women I've sponsored that are no longer here because they couldn't do this, because they got picked off. You know, that's a real thing. If you sit, I dare you, sit in these rooms long enough and you will see people go away. They'll go over behind, they'll go to the railroad tracks in Fresno and they will let a train take them. That is a true story. I have watched that happen. They will go away because when we don't have what we need, when we are an alcoholic who does not have our alcohol but does not have the spiritual experience, does not have a program, we get very, very sick. And you will want to die, but you won't. You will probably live longer than you want to. I remember feeling like I can't, I want to die and I can't. I just won't. I can't die. You know, I remember feeling that way. Not to get off on a tangent, but you know, I really, I don't want to forget those women who are no longer with me, because I'm afraid. I don't care if I have 11 years. I don't care if I'm up here speaking and I say yes. I'm not exempt. I can relapse on that bad behavior and I can take a drink. Alcohol can become very attractive to me again if I don't do what I do, if I don't practice that spiritual obedience that the book talks about, if I don't remain sponsorable, and if I don't be, I'm not of service, you know. And, you know, I want to talk about service before we, I've got like 7 minutes. Okay, let's talk about that. I started doing H&I. Anyone familiar with H&I? H&I takes meetings into hospitals and institutions, places where the alcoholic is confined, jails, prisons, treatment centers, anywhere where the alcoholic cannot get out. I didn't want to do it. My second sponsor said, oh, no, you will. Oh, yes, you will. And so I'd be like 10 days in, I'd be like, oh my God, panic attack, like making excuses, trying to get out of it. It was my first experience in service, you know. Service is so many things. It's doing this. It's saying yes. If you are not saying yes in this program, if someone asks you, oh, hey, Reed, oh, can you do this? If you're not saying yes, you're messing up. You're messing up. I cannot sit here and take any longer. I cannot sit here and take any longer. I've been a taker all my life. I don't care who you are. I'll take from my mom. I'll take it right out of my brothers and sisters' hands. I'm a taker. I've been that way. I have to start doing something else. I have to start putting that back out into the universe, whatever that looks like. Oh, go ahead. Oh, yeah, you've got two things. Go ahead in front of me in line. Oh, you need me to help? Yeah, sure. You need help moving? Sure, yes. At work, I need to start giving back in every area of my life because I've done too much. I've taken too much. I need to ensure that Alcoholics Anonymous is here for your kids. for my kids. I need to carry the message, not a message, not some message. I'm talking about the message. The message that's in this book, the steps, the traditions, the message of Alcoholics Anonymous that says there is hope. That if you're sitting here and you're thinking, why? What's the point? Nice. Oh, that's a nice story. Alcoholics Anonymous will allow you to come back. From whatever it is that you have gone so far from, Alcoholics Anonymous will show you how to come back from that. Alcoholics Anonymous will show you that it will not always be this way. It will not always be this way. I am proof of that. I used to think that I was what I had done. That stuff behind, I point back there, that's where it's at. That used to be who I was. The stuff I had done, where I had been, what I'd let happen. It owned me, and it doesn't anymore. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I did that, and I don't do that anymore. And you know what? I have some time under my belt not doing it. So I'm sorry, what? You can't beat me with that anymore. I can't beat myself with that anymore. You know, that's what this program does. There are, I get scared because I see people who don't sponsor, you know, and I don't know how I can stay sober without my sponsees, because I will forget. I will forget where I've been. I will, that all that work I did on my mom, all those like insights and spiritual experiences, 4 years later, I forgot, and I was treating my mom terribly again. And I broke up, I was looking through some journals, and I was like, oh my God, just like I can't remember the pain and suffering of my last drink, I will not remember where I've been and what I've done, who I am, what I'm capable of doing. And I have to work with women who will remind me who I am, or who will crack open stuff I don't know about me. I can't afford to not know that stuff. I can't afford not to know what road alcoholism is going to take to get me. Because my alcoholism knows I'm not going to put a drink in my mouth anymore. But it knows I might, you know, I'm very concerned with what you think about me. I'm very concerned with looking well. I'm very concerned with my children also getting, you know, being everything I expect of them. I'm very concerned with a lot of things, controlling a lot of things in my life. And that's where my alcoholism is going to hunt. Why would it present itself in a drink when it knows it can destroy me in other things? My alcoholism, the longer I stay sober, it manifests into other things that will make me thirsty, that will make me want to drink. And I have a feeling, and I have one sobriety date. I don't know why, it's just that way. I have a feeling though that my alcoholism will take whatever it needs to take to get me thirsty, to get me back to that, I call it my piece of shitism, return me to that piece of shitism, and then I have to drink. You know, so I say yes, I sponsor, I do H&I, do this, yes, 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 speak here, do this, throw out these garbages, okay, yes, 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 help on this, blah, 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 okay, yes, whatever, because I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to do drinking anymore, I don't want to do the pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization anymore. This is the best life I've ever known. This really is. I am the best I've ever been. I get to be around women who inspire me, who are the best that they are. We have, you know, we have a fellowship among us, and it's amazing. This is the best life I've ever seen. My parents didn't live this way. My grandparents didn't live this way. I don't know this. This is new to me. And I am incredibly, incredibly grateful that all that stuff behind me had to happen. If all that stuff had to happen for me to be here now, I'm totally cool with that. It's totally fine. You know, this is more than I could have ever dreamed of. I just want to finish with this. If you are here at meetings and you are not working the steps, you are putting a Band-Aid on a slit throat. You will bleed out. You have to work the steps. You have to get with someone who can show you how to do this. It's not enough. If you're a real alcoholic, first of all, figure that out. If you are a real alcoholic and you are not drinking, you will become very, very sick. I've seen it. I've experienced it. Get yourself a sponsor and work the steps. Thank you so much.